ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जयम् उदीरये। We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8. The Lord slays the king of the demons. We're on text number 3 and 4. Word for word. Kopa avesha.
Kopa avesha.
By a very angry mood. Chalat. Trembling. Gatraha. The whole body. Putram. His son. Hantum, to kill. Manaha, mind. Dadhe, fixed. Shiptva, rebuking. Parushaya, with very harsh. Vacha, words. Prahradam, Prahlad Maharaj. Atat arhanam,
not fit to be chastised,
due to his noble character and tender age.
Aha,
said, ikshamana,
looking at him in anger.
Papena, because of his sinful activities.
Tirashchinena,
crooked.
Chakshusha,
with eyes.
Prashraya
anvantam.
Prashraya
vanatam.
Very gentle and mild.
Dantam,
very restrained.
Bada anjalim,
having folded hands.
Avastitam,
situated.
Sarpa,
a snake.
Pada ahata,
being trampled by the foot.
Iva,
like.
Shvasan,
hissing.
Prakriti,
by nature.
Daruna,
very evil.
Translation. When Hiranyakashipu understood the entire situation, he was extremely angry.
What situation?
Entire.
Yes, Prabhu. Do you have a mic yet? For the. Go ahead.
Prabhu Maharaj preaching to his fellow classmates.
Yeah, Krishna consciousness is getting leaked somehow. Okay.
I think if I remember correctly, the previous verse of Shanda and Amarka reported about what's going on, and Hiranyakashipu was deceased.
He was, yeah. He's hissing now. He's very, very upset. Okay, that's the entire situation. Thus, he finally decided to kill his son Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was by nature very cruel, and feeling insulted, he began hissing like a snake trampled upon by someone's foot. His son Prahlad was peaceful, mild, and gentle. His senses were under control, and he stood before Hiranyakashipu with folded hands. According to Prahlad's age and behavior, he was not to be chastised. Yet with staring, crooked eyes, Hiranyakashipu rebuked him with the following harsh words.
Kupavisha chalad gatra.
Kupavisha chalad gatra.
Putram hantum manodate.
Putram hantum manodate.
Shiptva parushaya vacha.
Shiptva parushaya vacha.
Paradam atid arhanam.
Paradam atid arhanam.
Ahikshamana papena. Tirashjinena chakshusha. Prashraya vanatam dantam.
Prashraya vanatam dantam.
Badhanjalim avastatam.
Badhanjalim avastatam.
Sarpa padahata iva.
Sarpa padahata iva.
Shwasan prakriti darunaha.
Shwasan prakriti darunaha.
Would somebody like to try it? Kopavesha chaladgatra. Putram hantum manodhade. Shiptva parushaya vacha. Praradam atadarhanam. Ahekshamana papena. Hirashina chakshusha.
Prashraya vanatam dantam.
Prashraya vanatam dantam.
Vadajanam avastitam.
Vadanjalim avastitam.
Sarpa padahata iva.
Sarpa padahata iva.
Shwasan prakriti daruna.
Shwasan prakriti daruna. Representative from the Vaishnavis. Kopavesha chaladgatra.
Putram hantu manodhade. Shiva
parushaya vacha. Shiva parushaya vacha.
Pravradam atadarhanam.
Pravradam atadarhanam. Ahekshamana papena. Tirashchinena chakshusha.
Prashraya
vanatam dantam.
Badanjalim avastitam.
Sarpa padahata iva. Shwasan prakriti darana. Purport. When one is impotent toward a highly authorized devotee, one is punished by the laws of nature. The duration of his life is diminished, and he loses the blessings of superior persons and the results of pious activities. Hiranyakashipu, for example, had achieved such great power in the material world that he could subdue practically all the planetary systems in the universe, including the heavenly planets, Swargaloka. Yet now, because of his mistreatment of a Vaishnava, as Prahlad Maharaj, because of his mistreatment of such a Vaishnava as Prahlad Maharaj, all the results of his tapasya diminished. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, Ayushriyam Yashodharmam Lokan Ashisha Evasha Hanti Shriyamsi Sarvani Kunkso Mahad Atikrama. When one mistreats great souls, his lifespan, opulence, reputation, religion, possessions, and good fortune are all destroyed. So I'll make a few remarks about the verse and purport, and then we can have some reflections, questions, and discussion, albeit briefly, given the time we have. This canto, and particularly this section about Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj, begins with a question by Maharaj Parikshit at the beginning of the seventh canto, in which he wants to know how it is that the Lord is
neutral towards all living entities, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, samoham sarva bhuteshu nami dvesho stina priyaha. Because it seemed in the sixth canto that the Lord had showed favoritism towards Indra and his minions, and Parikshit wants to set the record straight and understand how it is that the Lord is equal to all living entities. And Shukadeva Goswami gives an explanation of why it is that people get so-called favorable circumstances in the material world and others get seemingly unfavorable circumstances. I mean, from a material point of view, it's not seemingly. They are good. Some are better than others. But from an absolute point of view, they're all bad, just as being in prison isn't good overall. But you might get better treatment, like a free avocado or something like that, if you're good. And Shukadeva Goswami explains that actually it's the positioning of each living entity within the three modes of material nature that avails that living entity of particular favors or lack thereof from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's offering his unlimited favors to everyone. It's just a matter of my receptivity. That's an interesting concept and a principle that one might live by, and that is to examine one's own capacity to accept the mercy of the Lord. In fact, that is why we prepare ourselves through the practice of devotional service. That is, we do prepare ourselves through the practice of devotional service to receive the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is always available. But we attract that by entering more deeply within the practice of devotional service. As I quoted earlier from the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, 29th verse, samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te te shuchapyaham. In the first half of the verse, we hear Krishna saying that I'm equal to every living entity and I don't envy anyone. And in the second half, he says, ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te te shuchapyaham. However, he says, if somebody enters within the process of devotional service, he actually enters within me and I enter within him, one becomes absorbed and avails oneself to the complete mercy of the Lord. It's so complete that actually it's inordinate. One of the names of Krishna is Vanchatita. Vancha, as everyone knows, means to desire, and Atita means beyond or above. Bhagavan, Krishna, who's speaking in the second half of the verse I've just quoted, Maite te shuchapyaham, rewards the desires of the living entity far more than he could expect, beyond his expectations. Whereas Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Paramatma speaking, gives tit for tat, as you desire. Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. I will reward you accordingly. So there's this relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We all have that eternal relationship. And now we see unfolding here the pastime of Hiranyakashipu becoming extremely obnoxious, to say the least, and terrorizing the universe, and now beginning to terrorize his own son, the saintly Prahlad Maharaj, who is a pure devotee. And what will be the result of that? Well, the results of his austerities and his any kind of good positioning he has in this world, as far as he's concerned, will be destroyed because of that. And eventually, as he tries to kill Prahlad, then Nrisingadev will kill Hiranyakashipu. And within the pastime of his being killed, there's an interesting observation that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes, and that is, and sorry for the graphic nature of this description. I know this kind of a family show, that as he tears out Hiranyakashipu's heart, he observes and comments. In fact, it's mentioned by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur that he tears out his heart with the lotus buds of his hands in a gentle way. I mean, as gentle as you can be when you tear out somebody's heart. And he observes that he comments or asks the rhetorical question, how is it that you've allowed such base qualities to reside within your heart? He's turning the heart over and looking and saying, how could you allow such desires to exist here? In the pastime of cleansing the Gundicha temple, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the metaphor of cleansing one's heart as one cleanses the temple, and that the process of devotional service is meant to make the heart clean enough, a fit place for the Lord to sit down so that one can worship the Lord there. In fact, Srila Prabhupada comments, paraphrasing Srila Prabhupada, that upon achieving such a glorious feat, that is cleansing one's heart enough so that it's fit for the Lord to sit down there and be worshipped, one can hold a festival and invite all one's friends and offer prasadam to everybody to celebrate that day that one's made one's heart fit for the Lord to sit. The beginning of a rap song. So that's sort of an overview of the situation. And then a few practical points before we have some discussion. One is that the seventh canto, as we go further, we'll mention in an astoundingly profound verse that the highest form of all religion is to give up envy for other living entities. In fact, the entrance into the science of Krishna consciousness, so hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, is predicated on one's giving up envy. Nirmatsaranam satam. One has to give up selfishness and envy in order to allow the vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam to penetrate one's being and for one to be affected. Well, of course, one will be affected by it and come to that point by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's meant for those who are on that path or who have achieved this non-enviousness. And this could be a discipline, actually, or a goal in life to give up envy. There are many admonitions given throughout the Shastra about not envying others and being careful about criticism, which arises from base envy within the heart. There's a paradigm given by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the Srimad Bhagavatam in one of his commentaries, in which he describes various levels of consciousness. And there's six altogether that he mentions. First three on the side of those who are contaminated by the propensity to criticize others. One is that person criticizes when he when there's a great cause for criticism. There's some good quality, some bad quality, so he considers the bad quality instead of the good. And then there's one in between, but the topmost criticizer is when there's no cause for criticism at all. In fact, there's no fault whatsoever in the person, that this person is so expert that he'll find some fault when it's not there. On the other side, there are those who are liberal-minded, and there are good qualities, bad qualities, and one chooses to pick the good quality over the bad. Then there's an interim point, and at the topmost level, there's no good quality at all. But this person is able to find something and say, oh, that's a good quality, and bring it out. How could this be possible? It depends on one's appreciation of the power of bhakti. Kiratuhu nandra pulinda pulkasha abhira shumbha yavanaka sadaya yene cha papa yada pashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave nama. Shukadev Goswami raises the flag of bhakti and declares that I don't care who you are, or where you come from, where you're starting from. On their past and says, oh, he was like this, therefore that's who he is. A higher level person will judge somebody on their present condition. Who cares about the past? This is what they are now. But the topmost person thinks about their future potential and says, whatever they were in the past or they are now, I know there's a spark in there. If that spark is fanned, or even though they don't know it right now, they're coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, I know what the result is going to be. They're going to come to the perfectional stage of life. This is actually a good way to live, is to be able to see the good in others, see the potential in others. Of course, not to go too far on this, because the Shastra reins us in a little bit and says, be discriminating. Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dusatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadimaha. The preacher has to see that there are various entities in the world and interact with each one in a unique way. One is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should give one's love. For all the devotees, one should develop appropriate friendships. For those who are innocent and open, one should pour in as much mercy as possible. And for the envious, one should be avoidant, if there is such a word. One should not try to engage such persons, because you'll make them more envious. Nonetheless, Jiva Goswami says, as you avoid them, you should also be praying for their welfare and thinking of ways in which you might, in the future, engage them and elevate them. That's good work if you can get it, to live like that, to make that your preoccupation in life, to help others. So about giving up envy, there are many thoughts about this. One is given, or several times, at least twice, mentioned in the Bhagavatam, to see that the universe is working in a uniform way, meaning every living entity is interacting with the three modes of material nature and therefore is getting a result according to what he or she deserves. So why should I be overly concerned about what somebody else has or doesn't have? Because it's their relationship with the modes of nature. And one of the ways in which I've contemplated insulating myself from the tendency to envy others is to be self-contained. I specifically cherish a verse from the Bhagavatam, Yadrishcha Labhasantushto Dvandvatito Vimatsaraha. Krishna says, try to be self-contained and accept Yadrishcha, those labha, gain, that comes of its own accord. Notice that things come of their own accord. And santushto, be fully satisfied with that. And don't worry about what other people have. Or as they'll tell you in yoga class, don't compare yourself to others. Notice that you have a relationship with Krishna and with the three modes of material nature, which is Krishna's energy. And if you fully concentrate on doing whatever it is you need to do for your own upliftment and simply stay in that position and accept whatever comes of its own accord because of that, then you have no reason to become overly involved with the lives of others and their gains or losses and so forth. Does that resonate? Actually, since time's running down, I'm going to cut the monologue and take some reflections. Yes, Bhakti Alex.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. This is more of a question but in regard to what we were talking about.
Okay.
So I had previously been under the conception that karma was ultimately meant to help move us closer to Krishna. And it's also mentioned in the Gita and other places that you perform pious activities and so you get born in a higher class family or more wealthy family that is more conducive to spiritual growth in general. But nowadays it seems that the more wealthy people are, especially you notice in book distribution, generally don't even stop to look at you, and they tend to be what nothing to do with spiritual life whatsoever. They're intoxicated by their wealth and possessions and power, whereas the people who maybe have performed non-pious activities and are in a more poor situation are much more apt to take a book or be more spiritual in general. And so I'm wondering if you can clear that up regarding if karma is actually meant to, our karmic reactions are meant to bring us closer, or they're just basically like an exchange, between you do a pious activity, you get more material enjoyment, or you do an impious activity, you have to suffer, but you may end up being more spiritual, which is actually for your benefit.
Prayers personified Veda, the personified Vedas in their prayers mention that the world has two purposes. One is for the enjoyment of the living entities, so-called enjoyment, actually. And the other is for self-rectification. And it really depends on one's perspective. And of course, bhakti can appear anywhere. We're always surprised by where it does appear. Because oftentimes, as an example, the image you drew for me was, going on the streets of New York and just randomly meeting people and offering your friendship and other kinds of gifts in the form of literature. Then, what does the mind tell me? That this person will take, that person won't take, and so forth, but it's usually wrong. And you never know where it's going to come from. So, Prabhupada mentions, however, in the Krishna book that poor people in, and we just walked in, and they go, "How you doing, honey?" It's like you just got, they're eating dinner, and they barely even look up. It's like, "You want some? Sit down." And another guy came out of his apartment and goes, "This is fantastic. I'm going to help you out. I'll tell you where to go, which doors to go to, and things like that." Whereas we notice when we go to rich neighborhoods, if you even step on their porch, they call the police. "What are you doing here? You can't come here." In fact, I remember Jagadish, he was the GBC up in Toronto.
He used to have, have you ever been up to that Toronto temple? It's in the wealthiest neighborhood, maybe in North America. I mean, they don't have houses, they have compounds there. And you know, he used to take compassion on the rich people. He'd go door to door in the rich neighborhoods because he wanted to show a little love to the rich. You try that out. I didn't even answer your question, but really, Krishna's got a system. The material world's systematized. And if you figure out what the system is and you become smart, then you can sensitize yourself through the various ways in which the material nature gives you immediate feedback. If you listen to the feedback, then you can become really an upright citizen in this world, what to speak of a compassionate person and a devotee. So people right now are a little distracted, that's true. But we can't be short-sighted and think that they'll always be like that. They're all living entities, they're all sensitive. And so we just have to be sensitive and loving kind, be self-contained, save one person at a time, beginning with myself. And in due course of time, every gesture of kindness, especially surcharged with the power of the intention of giving Krishna consciousness, will bear fruit. Other questions or comments? Jai Jagannath Prabhu.
I've heard this from Devendra Swami over the years, that the only thing more difficult to give up than hate is justified hate. And it's always resonated with me in terms of the difficulty of it. When you feel that the scenario justifies a certain envy or hatred, like if Prahlad Maharaj were to hate his father or envy him, it would be completely understandable and no one would hold it against him. And yet that's also a defect in our development. So I think your class really addresses it, but I was just kind of wanting to zoom in on that. Like, how does one give up the feeling of justified hate or misgiving?
Well, one way of doing that is to understand one's own self-interest. I mean, if I actually understand what my self is, that's helpful when developing self-interest. But there's also a profound sense in which when we appreciate others, we take on their good qualities. A famous quote from Voltaire in which he says, it's an amazing phenomena that when you appreciate the good qualities in others, you actually imbibe those qualities yourself. Envy blocks our ability to take in the good qualities of others or absorb them from even, you know, the most filthy place. And so even in the sense of one's own self-interest, being open to the good qualities in others, the mysteries of the world, and so on, if one is able to put envy aside, it's very self-sustaining. We can actually, you know, live a much fuller, richer life through that. So starting from the buddhi, even understanding it intelligently, that I can't learn from others or gain any other good qualities by being envious. One could at least practice putting it aside. Is that something? Okay. Another reflection or a question, please.
Towards the end of the third canto, Lord Kapila Dev starts talking about what happens to certain gradations of people who commit sinful activities in their life and earn by cheating means and other things. And it's pretty heavy and pretty ghastly, and just the things that happen to people who live their lives this way. And so I could see how that would be quite justified in earlier ages, you know, where the whole kind of general flow of society was more towards pious activity and all that. But nowadays, the society is based on these kinds of activities, and they're actually promoted, you know, to be selfish and get ahead and earn by whatever means you can, and cheat on your girlfriend or your wife and all these things. And so in a society where all these things that ultimately lead to just horrible suffering are endorsed and advertised and like an ingrained part of the culture, I was wondering, do the same rules apply and they haven't seen any effect on people?
Well, first of all, I don't think people actually like that stuff. They do notice that it's not normal, even though they're compelled in that way, and there's a momentum that the culture gets after some time that promotes that kind of idea, that it's okay to be promiscuous or to be licentious, but it is noticeable when somebody shows some good quality, everyone sits up and goes, "Wow, where'd that come from? That's amazing." So people do have an innate sense that there's good qualities and bad qualities. And so, if you actually live a life of integrity, which is where it all starts from, it's from our own integrity, where we have the power to have some moral authority and actually present ourselves to others as an example, then it'll have an effect on the world. So actually, you could see it another way, that with such a backdrop that you've described, you actually have a greater opportunity to shine in the world through your own example and integrity. So be that example. You can change the world. People are eager to see that. And so bring it out and show, and you'll be surprised that people will gravitate towards that. And that's all that we have time for, and I thank you very much for coming out today. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Hari Bo. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.